Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message. Today, we hear from Kent Dobson as he begins our new series, Yes, But What About Jesus? Please check the description for links to our quarterly Spotify playlist and guided meditation.
Have you ever noticed how many different Jesuses there are? Like an American Jesus, a European Jesus, a medieval Jesus, an emperor kind of Jesus. There's the historical Jesus. There's right now a kind of Jesus for the right and a Jesus for the left. A woke Jesus, a woke left Jesus, and a right judge Jesus. Like, what is going on? How can this one historical figure spark so much wild diversity? How can so many different kinds of groups and ethnicities and theologies claim the same figure? What is happening? And part of the answer to that is that somehow Jesus, or what I would call the symbolic Jesus, transcends all of those iterations. In other words, there's something behind a word like Christ, or a word like Jesus, or the image of the Christ. There's something behind it that's compelling and interesting. Otherwise, it wouldn't last. How is it that we're still talking about this person 2,000 some years later? No one would have guessed. No one would have guessed essentially a peasant would spark that kind of global now, and I really mean that, global conversation. And yet, it's also true that Christianity seems to be changing, like drastically, and evolving, and transforming, and fracturing at times. So something's going on with Christianity, something's going on with Jesus, and that's what I want to talk about for the next 3 weeks. I want to try to have a conversation about Jesus. And I'm glad to be doing it here at Eastlake. So thanks for having me. My name is Kent Dobson. I've been a part of Eastlake for, I don't know, a while now, 5 years, something like that, leading Wilderness Within retreats, giving talks, meeting friends. Eastlake has been actually a really important part of my own story. About the time I started to leave mainstream evangelical Christianity as a pastor here in Michigan, that's when I met people at Eastlake, and I felt freedom to ask questions and to expand and to grow and to be challenged, and I'm just so grateful to be a part of this place. So the title of my talk today, or of the whole series, I'm going to do 3 weeks on this, is Yes, But What About Jesus? And I got that title from many of you. Because as I was starting to say things like, well, I don't really line up with all the doctrine statements, so to speak, or the things you're supposed to believe inside the container of Christianity, many of you were saying, yeah, okay, neither do I, but what about Jesus? What do you do with Jesus? And I never really knew how to answer that question, although I think it's a good one, because it's a way of acknowledging the same thing that I was describing before, is there's something compelling about the symbol. That's my language, the symbol that Christ represents, that's still compelling and active and interesting and potentially transformative, despite like the craziness and madness of Christianity and all the many people and groups that lay claim to the figure. In other words, I don't find myself lining up with things, but I still find Jesus pretty interesting. So what's happening? And that's what I want to try to talk about as best I can in the way that I can. And I just released an audiobook, in fact, called A Grain of Wheat, The Christ Symbol. And it's because this question has been working me for so long, and I really didn't know how to answer it, that eventually gave birth to this little audiobook, which is, in a sense, my response. What is still compelling and active about the symbol of Christ? You could even say the mystical Christ if you wanted to. I prefer the symbolic Christ that is still needed. And before I jump into that stuff, and sort of try to outline where I'm going, I think it is worth asking something like this. Yeah, but why are we even talking about Jesus? Can we just move on? Or sometimes you hear, yeah, enough of Jesus, let's bring in a bunch of other voices. And none of those impulses are necessarily bad, but I'll try to answer the question as best I can and directly. Why should we be talking about this? And I can think of like three reasons. The first is that the Jesus story, for better or worse, is part of the Western Western consciousness. It really gave birth in part to the West and to the Western world, we could say, or the Jesus story is somehow woven into it, so you can't unravel it. Why should we be talking about it? Because it's part of a web here, and it needs our attention. The other thing I might say is that something of the Jesus image or the Christ symbol is also in the unconscious, so you can't do anything about it anyway. Jesus is just as likely to show up in your dreams, even if you dismiss Christianity altogether. In other words, it's in the unconscious. It's in the collective unconscious. It's part of the images that have influenced our psyche. So you can't just all of a sudden decide one day, enough is enough, I'm moving on. It doesn't really work that way. The psyche has no time. It doesn't operate by the same sort of rules of linear history. And the third reason is maybe to say something that religion and Christianity, as one expression of religion, is a mess right now. There's a kind of sickness happening. And personally, I don't think the cure for the sickness is to get rid of Jesus or to get rid of Christianity, as if that's even possible, or to dispense with religion. Although I get it when people say, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. I sort of get the impulse of that, but it just doesn't seem to be that easy. In fact, religion doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So maybe the cure is not less Jesus, but more. I know I suddenly sound like a fundamentalist or something, but I'm not. But the cure is, I think, giving it attention, trying to listen and allow the symbolic Christ, which, back to the title of my audiobook, Jesus has this great line. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains a single seed. But if it goes into the ground, it produces a great harvest. So I take that to be the central image of his entire life, of a life transformed, we could say. The grain of wheat dying and going into the ground. In other words, the life-death life cycle, or the death and resurrection cycle, is at the very heart of the Christ symbol. And something like that is needed right now. Things are dying. Things are passing away. Ways of looking at the world are dying. Our egocentric, narcissistic, me-centered, tribalistic worldview is under great strain, as it should be. In other words, something is dying and something needs to go into the ground, but also something new needs to be born. You've probably heard Einstein's famous quotation, no problem can be solved by the same consciousness that created it. Yeah, and we say, oh yeah, we agree. No problem can be solved by the same consciousness that created it. Yeah, but how do you get rid of the old consciousness? You don't read that quote and then have a new consciousness. No, something dies. And maybe more than that, we could say there's something about transformation itself that the Christ symbol really speaks to, and I think draws us into, and even threatens us with. It's like, do any of us really want to experience a kind of ego death, a kind of unraveling, so that something more can be born? Or do we just want to continue to operate on confirmation bias? I know, and I'm just looking for confirmation that I know. That's really summarizes the left and the right now. And I think Jesus is one of those figures that transcends both and calls for an active kind of death and resurrection. And at one point, Jesus is asked in the Gospels for a sign. He says, give us a sign. He says, no sign will be given to you except the sign of Jonah. Which is his way of saying, you're looking for a sign, but I'm actually telling you, you have to undergo something. You have to, like Jonah, set off toward a place you think you're going, only to be thrown overboard, tossed into the sea, swallowed by a fish, brought down to Hades, and then vomited out on a new shore. That's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of transformation that the mystery of the divine wants to take you through. Sometimes I use the metaphor of a house. It's like, so you're remodeling a house, and you've been working on it for a long time, and you redo the kitchen and the bathrooms and the wiring, and you paint, and you get it all good to go. And on the last day, you're finally done, and you're screwing in the light switch. You know, the thing you've been putting off for 6 months, because it works, but you put the light switch cover on and you screw it in, and you sit down on the couch, and then there's a knock on the door. You're like, and you get up, you walk over the door and you open it, and there's the Christ figure standing there, and he says, time to leave. Leave all this behind. Yeah, and who wants to undergo that? You're like, I just spent the whole first half of my life trying to get all this stuff in order, get all my beliefs in order, and raise a family and get a job and be somebody and identify as something. And I took the Enneagram test and the Myers-Briggs, and, you know, I've got my spirit animal, and it's all ordered inside my house. And the Christ figure says, time to leave, time to be thrown overboard. Time to go into the ground. So that's what I want to talk about. And that's what I still find compelling about the Christ symbol. That's why I think we ought to be talking about it, and why I think something like church matters. And I know churches, I see East Lake as out on the leading edge of something. And I'm part of a community here called C3 in Michigan. And in some ways they're similar, and they're, I guess, more values-based communities, but they're on the leading edge. The changing nature of spirituality and the great conversation, around meaning, and I don't think we can just, what's the cliche, throw the baby out with the bathwater. It doesn't work that way. So I want to, over the next 3 weeks, just take a look at the life of Jesus. And one of the things that occurred to me as I began to sort of come back to the story of Jesus, because it's kind of like a girlfriend or a boyfriend that you break up with and keep getting back together with. That's kind of like my relationship with Jesus. Like, we're done. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess we can go out next Thursday. That's kind of what it felt like. But as I started to come back around to the story, I saw something like a pattern.
Hey everyone, excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
I see Jesus's life kind of in seven stages, and I'm not going to talk about all seven. You can check out the audiobook if you want, but I see something like Jesus's life, a life transformed, a grain of wheat, having seven kind of symbolic stages, and I'll list them for you, and I only want to talk about one of them today. So the seven stages are birth as a symbol, the birth narratives, the birth story. The second is what I like to call calling. So stage one is birth. Stage two is calling. Stage three is wilderness, going out into the wilderness. No, I'm sorry. Stage three is transcendence. So we have birth, calling, transcendence. Stage four is wilderness. Stage five, I call mission. Stage six, I call authority. And stage seven is the grain of wheat, the life, death, life cycle, the meta image that I think summarizes the symbolic Christ. And I like the phrase the symbolic Christ because it sort of gets behind all the many faces of Jesus that have happened down through history. Maybe it's like this. It's like, we can't help initially projecting onto Jesus or onto God or onto our partners for that matter, ourselves. That's what projection is. We project onto the other something that we can't yet see in ourselves or something that we're not willing to own. That's why conservative Jesus looks like a conservative to conservatives and why liberal Jesus looks like a liberal to the liberals. You project onto Jesus. It's like, you initially create Jesus in your own image, maybe is a good way of saying it. Only to have that, and I think the Bible allows that. The Bible is actually full of that kind of stuff. People projecting onto God, all kinds of things. Only to have that unraveled in the transformation process. It's like, it's part of it, and then also it gets challenged. So the symbolic Christ is sort of like saying, there's something behind the masks that we put on this figure. So, in any case, something about these seven stages, and I like thinking about transformation as being a kind of development because I wish it was like a lightning bolt. It's like, you know, there I am, magically transformed on a park bench. You know, I love Eckhart Tolle, by the way, and he has this amazing encounter where he's in the bathroom and he doesn't realize he's talking to himself out loud, and it like shakes him to his core, and he starts to wonder about who is the one talking. And then he sits on a park bench for 3 days and his whole life is transformed. And it makes it seem like this single moment transforms him. And in some ways that's true, and in other ways it's not. It's part of a story. He was struggling with depression for many, many years. So it's something like you can have moments of encounter, but then also something like a process needs to take place, has to unfold. Or maybe it's like lightning bolt in a forest, but then the forest smolders for a long time. And I think in the 21st century, it's important to talk about transformation as process. And I see Jesus's life as kind of a life transformed through these seven stages. And all of them, I think, have interesting gifts for how we might understand not only our own personal transformation, but transformation more broadly, like cultural transformation or religious transformation, religious communities that are transforming and changing. And I think they're, it's kind of the both and sort of thing. So what I want to talk about today is just a little bit of what I'm calling stage two, which is the stage of calling. Something about the image or the symbol of being called to something. And maybe first I'll start with a story and then I'll make some comments about it. So according to the Gospels, at age 12, which is interesting in and of itself because from a Jewish point of view, Jesus is not yet an adult. That happens at age 13. You have the bar mitzvah and the bat mitzvah. You become an adult at age 13 in Judaism. So he's not quite there. And the text says they go to Jerusalem for the Passover, as was the family's custom, and they head home. And what ends up happening is Jesus gets separated from his parents, and he stays in the temple for 3 days, listening to the teachers and the rabbis, asking them questions, answering questions, engaging in this kind of intense dialogue. And his parents don't know that he's even gone for a couple days, and they realize it, and they have to go all the way back to Jerusalem to try to find Jesus. And they say to him, "What were you doing? You know, what were you doing?" And he has this famous line. He said, "Did you not know that I had to be in my Father's house?" Which gives you a little hint or a clue about the direction Jesus's life is going to begin to take. I had to be in my Father's house. And if we leave kind of theological sort of Trinitarian language aside for a second, you know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit kinds of language, we could just say, what's Jesus talking about in the most simple sense? Well, Father is kind of a common metaphor for God in the first century. So Jesus wasn't unique to use that phrase, but he's saying something like, I want to be taught by the mystery, by something beyond my ordinary and earthly father. In other words, my community, my worldview, my religion, my synagogue, what I'm supposed to do for a living, the good boy that I'm supposed to become, I am drawn to something else. It's almost as if I have another father. It's almost as if I'm orphaned in the world. And he finds himself suddenly alive in among strangers, talking about the biblical text, I imagine, so that rabbis did and teachers and really at the heart of the tradition of Judaism. And he's alive and he's engaged and he's asking questions and he doesn't want to be anywhere else. This is home for me. I have a home that you know nothing about. And this is kind of disturbing to his parents. The text says Mary treasures this in her heart, and they go back home. And the Gospels actually add something that's kind of interesting. They say that Jesus went home and obeyed his parents for a long time, really, until about the age of 30 when he couldn't take it anymore. That's my translation. He couldn't take it anymore, and that initial calling led him out to leave his actual home in Nazareth. And once he does, he never goes back. And that's scary. That's frightening. Joseph Campbell, the famous scholar, says that calling is part of the archetypal path of the hero or the heroine. Without that initial draw, and maybe it's not even a one-time thing, but that alluring beckoning, like the sirens on the rocks in Odysseus, that like something is pulling you. Without that, there's no story. There's nowhere to go. You just stay at home and whittle wood with dad, you know, like whatever Jesus was doing, you know, for the day job. But that initial calling, Joseph Campbell says, is the call to the zone unknown. And I love that phrase because it's saying something like this. Transformation is like, at a certain stage, being called to the zone unknown. And if it's the zone unknown, you don't know anything about it. If you did, you could just, it would be a simple matter of negotiation, like, oh, well, I'm going to leave X and I'm going to graduate and, you know, move on to the next phase and it looks like Y. Or I'm going to leave my Christianity and I'm going to become a Buddhist. I'm going to exchange one worldview for the next one and I kind of know where I'm going. That's not the call. That's not calling. That's not the zone unknown. That's the zone known. That's laying it out. That's the ego wanting to be in charge of the transformation process. I'll go along as I can see where I'm going. We say without saying it. But the zone unknown is what I'm talking about. It's being led out beyond, out to the border and beyond to a country you haven't visited, to a language you don't speak. That's calling. And my view is that everybody experiences something like this, and it's very subtle. It's very subtle. What would you say was Jesus's calling? We don't know. He just felt like staying at the temple for a few days. I doubt if there was some voice that was like, hey, son, we need to hang out more, you know. Could you stay in Jerusalem for a couple days? I doubt it. I'm sure it was much more like a beckoning, or a dream, or a felt sense. And that's the nature of it. And it begins to call us out from our ordinary existence of who we think we are and our name and our identity and our, you know, whatever. Even our stories and the stories that we've told and clung to and retold. What's beyond that? That's the zone unknown, being lured here. And so what could we say of the symbol of calling? We could say, that's needed right now. I mean, would you say that the right or the left is don't need to transform? They've pretty much got it. They've got their language and their country down, and it's just a matter of protecting the borders? No. You'd say, unless there's a kind of radical transformation, we're going to keep hurting people and creating suffering and demonizing and scapegoating and finger pointing and draining the world of its precious resources in the name of progress. We're just going to continue doing it. We need a kind of radical transformation, and something like a calling to a zone we don't know anything about is that little tap on the shoulders. That's happening broadly, potentially, culturally, maybe globally for the first time. And also personally, when you think about your own story, that initial beckoning and hinting. And I want to say something very specific. I'm not talking about one day you say, I'm quitting my job as a megachurch pastor and I'm becoming a lawyer. This is all now I know. I simply chose the wrong career. Now, career change might be a part of the transformation process, but not necessarily. And I would say, at least in my experience, it's not that clear. In fact, Jesus might want to say something like, what would it look like for me to spend more time in my Father's house? You know, is that a job? And could you even take that literally, like the temple? No, it's a symbol. It's an image. Maybe you could even ask something like, what is my father's house or my mother's house? If you want to switch the gender here, which I think is totally permissible. What's that house that I feel like I'm being called to live in that's out beyond the edge in the zone unknown? There's a knock on the door and says, leave this house. Let's go find another one. That kind of thing. What is that? And when did that start? And one of the things that I think has been true about my own kind of spiritual life and my own, the transformation that's been happening in my own life, is that sometimes it feels like a paradox, like I'm moving into a zone I know nothing about, and it feels like a homecoming at the same time. It feels like something like this calling has always been there. I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in Virginia, actually, in the woods. And I spent hours and hours and hours outside, not thinking spiritual thoughts, just being in wild places. And in my own process of change and transformation in the last few years, I find myself again in those kinds of places. And it feels like a homecoming and a moving forward at the same time. And I think something like that is happening with the life of Jesus. It's like, by the time he finally leaves home, really, and I mean really, breaks the mold and never goes back and doesn't take up his dad's job anymore and doesn't listen to his mother who's saying, hey, be a good boy. He finally breaks out. It's like he's returning to the thing that was always there, the calling of the Father's house. And maybe the image of the Father's house needed to expand from the temple to Jerusalem to Israel to the Gentiles, to the ends of the earth, to the Lake of Galilee, and to the birds and the trees. What is this thing? The world of the divine, the mystery of the divine, the world of the divine. And he says, this is where I must live the rest of my days. And I'm willing to take some major social and cultural risks to do so. That's that luring. That's that calling. So, maybe just to end with a few questions, just in your own kind of self-examination. Have you ever spent time thinking about what made you come alive as a kid? Maybe when you were 12 or 8? Where did you feel that sense of homecoming that was maybe always there? Always beckoning, always saying, come on home, something like that. In other words, what were you drawn to early on at age 12 that still feels like, if you'll allow yourself, a kind of pull? Maybe here's another question. What's the zone unknown for you? And is it calling you right now? Is that beckoning happening? What would it look like for you to listen to that? And to take a few risks, even if it's just to put a toe in the water, just to take a tiny step toward the thing you feel led toward. What else can we ask? Maybe it feels like this. Now I must do what's mine to do in the world. You know, that's, I'm in part stealing a line from St. Francis, who says, I have done what is mine to do, now you must do what is yours to do. Like, when that dawns on you, okay, what is mine to do? That's when a word like calling, I think, the heat gets turned up. Really, what is it? What is the way of being you're called to inhabit? And what if I took off the many masks that I've been wearing to try to find out what that is? Now I must do what's mine to do. And what is that thing? You know, what do you want to, you know, put on your tombstone? I avoided it, whatever it is. I kept it at bay. I kept the deeper sense of calling at arm's length. That's what it says on your tombstone. Something like that. Or here's another question that you might find helpful. One of the things I think is interesting is that Jesus comes alive sitting among the masters, the teachers, the rabbis. What's that for you? When do you feel alive? Like when you're reading something or talking with certain people or listening to a certain podcast or listening to a certain kind of music, it's not that you like, I really like this. It's like, no, these are my people. This is my language. I'm at home in this world and I want more of it. And what would it look like for you to spend half an hour a day committed to that? I mean, forget about like quitting your job and chucking everything, just a half an hour saying, I want to find my Father's house, something like that. And maybe here's a PS to this. Just because we live, I don't know, you might be listening from all over the world. I'm going to say we live in America, but you could be listening from anywhere, but let's just take the Western world in general. We are obsessed with jobs and job as identity. And my PS is, I'm not talking about just finding a new job. You have to ask yourself a question. What was Jesus's job? And there's no answer to that. I mean, you could say, well, I guess he was some kind of carpenter, tecton, woodworker, maybe he was a fisherman. That's not even important. It's like, those are, whatever he did, that was just the survival dance. The sacred dance was what I'm talking about, the Father's house. Later on, Jesus calls himself the Son of Man, the Son of Humanity. This image of that seemed to chart a course for his life. What I'd like to say is each and every person on the planet, in my view, has that kind of thing. It's wildly unique to your way of being, but it's there. The Greeks have this, I got this from Michael Mead, but the mythologists, the Greeks have this amazing story. And it's something like this. There are two angels just before birth, and one lights a candle. And once the candle is lit, the aim or direction or destiny or purpose or soul of the person is seen. It's a glimpse. There it is for a moment. And the other angel blows the candle out and it's gone. And then you're born into the world. So it's like saying each of us have an aim, a kind of calling, a kind of thread. But the candle gets blown out for some reason. We don't come into the world candle in hand knowing what, we just lose our way. It's just part of it. It's like, I don't know why, but that's the human story. We have a direction, we have an aim, we have a sense of calling, and we tend to lose our way. So that's what I got for you today, as we begin a kind of 3-week conversation on yes, but what about Jesus? So I hope you'll join me in the next few weeks. I'm looking forward to it. And we'll see what next week has in store. Peace, grace, blessings I wish upon you, danger, risk, courage to move into the zone unknown, bravery I wish upon you. What does it look like to turn your life toward the beckoning?